Indeed.
Hey, welcome back to Women's Wellness Radio. I'm your host, Bridget Danner, and we're happy to have you back for another week of learning about health. Today's guest is Rylan Feeney. She's a friend and colleague of mine here in Portland, Oregon, and she'll be talking about using everyday spices for super health. So let me share a bit more about Rylan's education and how she got to where she is today. She's a dedicated scholar of Chinese medicine and holistic healthcare. She has been an AMA therapist and instructor of Chinese medicine and alternative healthcare since 1990. She founded the Wellspring School for the Healing Arts, where she is currently a teacher and director. She also currently serves the National Certification Commission for Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine as a subject matter expert and educational development committee member for the Asian Bodywork Therapy, and lives and maintains a private practice in Portland, Oregon. As a practitioner, Rylan specializes in family health concerns and maintenance, digestive issues, autoimmune disorders, cancer recovery, managing depression and anxiety, and moving towards a healthier, more authentic expression of life. So first of all, welcome, Rylan.
Hi, Bridget. Thanks.
Yeah, nice to have you. Happy New Year to you. I wanted to share a little bit about our personal history, so to speak. We had a mutual client is how we met, a fertility client who was doing nutrition work with you, and she went on to do AMA work with you, and she was doing Chinese medicine with me. So I don't know what happened next, but I think we stayed in touch, and I took one of the weekend modules at your school, which we'll hear more about. It's a whole course that I just kind of sat in on a module just kind of for my own personal learning, and it was so fabulous.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad. It's been great getting to know you and our paths cross, and it's nice having people we can work with here in Portland.
Oh, yeah, it's really fun. Actually, I saw Rylan and her co-director on the street, and I nabbed her, and I said, "You're going to be on my podcast." So here we
and
are.
And my partner said, "Yes."
Yeah, she's the marketer in the part there. Awesome. Well, yeah, here we are, and we're going to talk about something that I'm excited about because it's practical. You know, I'm a Virgo. I like to think, how can we put things into practice? How can we get our hands dirty with things? And you said, let's talk about spices, using spices for health. So first of all, why spices? What's so special about spices? Why should we talk about them?
Yeah, you know, I talk to people a lot about food every day. It's part of what I do in my daily practice, and then, of course, teaching nutrition. And it's very popular right now to talk about the things that are sort of missing from our diets and the parts from traditional diets that we've lost, bone broth and fermented foods and all these other wonderful things that we've started adding back into our diets. But I don't hear a lot of discussion around spices. And in my opinion, spices are really underutilized. And really, you know, they're a vital component missing from our daily food intake. I think when we look at the kind of like the standard American diet, it consists of a lot of packaged or pre-made foods, even as people embrace new ways of eating. And maybe they become paleo, they're still like buying, you know, little already made tonka bars and such. And people aren't thinking about traditionally the spices that are native to certain cuisines or using spices in their daily cooking. I think that our average diet, you know, really lacks a lot of like color and zest. And from a holistic perspective or from an energetic perspective, I think that, you know, we always say we are what we eat, and spices add that vim and vigor quite literally. They're aromatic, you know, and I think that's really important because they have the essential oils, right? And there's essential oils themselves have a great healing property. In fact, a lot of the spices that we see, they have a positive effect on our health, just the smell of them, not even having to cook with them, they can have a positive effect. So they literally enliven our senses and awaken our taste buds and help us increase our metabolism and our effectiveness of our digestion. That's how I look at it.
So I think you touched on this a bit by saying, you know, food, changing your diet is getting popular. People are doing paleo and stuff, but maybe they don't understand spices or know much about them. So, yeah, what would you say, you know, you see happening culturally that you'd like to kind of shift?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see people really think about broadening their spice knowledge. I think that a lot of people, if you ask them what spices they use, they might have a very short list of those that they know, or they might really not use any. Very often I'll ask people what kinds of spices they use, and the typical answer is like, well, maybe some basil, salt, pepper for sure, and some sort of a hot sauce, right? And people think of spices as some sort of a hot sauce. And I think that we can have people think about adding flavor to their food and color to their diet, and expanding their list of spices will provide not just those essential oils, but so much more, and increase the level of nutrient benefits in a really kind of fast and efficient manner, and really concentrated. So to me, the concept of adding spice to your life kind of takes on a whole new meaning when you think about, how can I spice up this meal? I really encourage my clients to have some sort of spice with most of their meals. And it can be gentle. Like, people think spices and they think, oh, I don't like a lot of spices, or I don't like things that are hot. But, you know, things like savory or marjoram or thyme or oregano, these are not necessarily hot, but they are spices, right?
Okay. Yeah, so it not only gives flavor, but it gives nutrition, which we'll talk more about. And I love the idea, even as you say, you know, people are more interested now in going paleo or changing their diet. But if you only have a few dishes you know how to make, and they're going to get kind of boring quickly. But if you can think, well, you know, I've got these fresh herbs, let me season my fish with this, and maybe I can throw this in my stir fry, or I've got this fresh turmeric, then it makes the food a lot more interesting.
Makes it more interesting, and it makes you more satisfied, I think, when you are kind of stimulating different taste buds and stimulating your sense of smell and being more engaged in the meal.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I remember when I used to be not such a great cook. I didn't even like, right, I'm going to admit this, I didn't even like cooking because I had to, like, stand so long in the kitchen. Like, that's ridiculous. And now I like cooking. I was like, oh, I'm going to stand up and cook. But now it takes a while, and you got to mess up some meals. But now I love experimenting. I rarely use recipes, and I just experiment with herbs or, oh, I had this thing at the restaurant, and let me try to make something like that, and a lot of fun. So yeah, definitely for adding creativity into meal time, I think is delightful.
That's awesome that you experiment and you can do it without recipes. I've been an avid cook. I love cooking, and I always have to have my base recipe. I never follow it, but it's like my security blanket. If I don't have it, I can't proceed.
Yeah, we're all different, and there's so many amazing cookbooks out there, and I definitely, you know, look through some for inspiration. So, yeah, lots of ways to learn. So if you're listening and you're like, oh, I don't cook, I don't know any spices, you know, have an open mind, stay tuned. There's lots of ways to learn. So let's move into nutrition.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Oh, about the nutrition? Yeah. Well, I was going to say, definitely stay tuned, because I also think there's lots of ways, you know, a lot of these herbs you can just simply make teas or add to even foods that you do already eat, right? So it doesn't require
that's
that. We
perfect.
Always cook, but, yeah.
That's a good
so,
thing too.
You know, yeah. The nutritional benefits of spices, I mean, first of all, right, spices, we call them spices when we cook with them, but in the healing world, we call them herbs, and all of those active constituents that are responsible for the actions and functions that so many herbs have that we spend billions of dollars on a year, and the supplement industry continues to grow at a rapid rate, they are all made from from spices and from herbs. And so spices are, first and foremost, I would say they're really, they're a powerhouse of phytonutrients, right? And including your bioflavonoids, which are what make color, the foods colorful. So all of our, like our teas and our vegetables and our fruits and all of those things, it's the bioflavonoids and the carotenoids and things like that that make them brightly colored. And those things, those components are often also very healing. They tend to be antioxidant. They tend to be anti-inflammatory. They tend to be anti-carcinogenic. They tend to be antihistamine, so they're great for allergies. Like think about like quercetin, which is a bioflavonoid that's found in all of your vitamin C foods. And because they're herbs and spices and they're dried, they're much more concentrated. So like, for instance, a half a teaspoon of cloves or cinnamon is about equal to the antioxidants that you would find in a half a cup of blueberries. So people are like really on board of that, like, oh, I'm going to have my blueberries every morning because they're really high in antioxidants. But adding just a half a teaspoon of a spice can have the same effect and have, you know, maybe even more. So they're full of nutrients. And in top of the phytonutrients, of course, they have vitamins and trace minerals and minerals. And they all have been shown by and large to increase metabolism. In fact, like cayenne has been shown to increase metabolism like upwards to 30%. Not that we want to add cayenne to everything, but all of the spices do increase metabolism as well as have these healing benefits.
Great. And I know you're going to detail a few of your favorite spices in a minute. From the Chinese medicine perspective, I know you're a practitioner, and I would love to hear more about your style of practice too. But what role do spices play in Chinese medicine?
Well, in Chinese medicine, we really recognize, again, the aromatic nature of most spices. Not all spices are that aromatic, but most spices are. And that aromatic nature, right, it's like it sort of drives, it penetrates. So it drives through stagnation. It opens up areas that are blocked in the body, and it moves stagnation, which is so important in Chinese medicine. All, by and large, 90% of your spices and herbs are both warming and tonifying, or they are yang in nature. And, of course, yang represents the functional aspects of our body and our minds. So quite literally, spices kind of wake up our senses and increase functioning. I think that's, you know, we can look again at the Western realization that it speeds up metabolism. It increases functioning. So most of the time in Chinese medicine, I'm using spices and herbs to kind of help create movement and to alleviate any stagnation that might be coming up. In fact, when people come in and they're depleted and they're tired and they've been overworked and we find that their spleen is really deficient, and sort of the classic prescription for spleen deficiency is sort of a easy to digest food because we don't want to overwork it. But if we just build, then we just increase the stagnation. So just like in Chinese herbalism, we need a little bit of movement there, whether it be like zest, like, you know, like orange zest, or whether it be a little bit of rosemary. Doesn't have to be Chinese. That's the beauty, right? We can apply the principles of Chinese medicine to Western herbs and to our traditional diet. So I like to do that. I like to bring in and find what kinds of flavors that people like, and then to make little recommendations, you know. So if they want a piece of toast in the morning and they put peanut butter on it, well, why not add some cinnamon, right? Simple things like that.
And that's a great idea, and it gets you kind of out of the, like, prepackaged food notion and a little bit more into the, like, oh, you know, let me add some lemon to my water because I found out that with a little cayenne is, you know, good for cleansing. And, you know, suddenly you're like your own little practitioner throughout the day. You can be like, oh, I ate a heavy meal, you know, let me have a little tonic tea now that I learned about. So really, really great practical stuff.
And people do this sort of innately, but sometimes they do it in a not so healthy manner, right? Like if we have a big meal, then we might want to have a cup of coffee afterwards because that coffee is bitter and it moves stagnation. Or people get really sort of almost addicted to like salsas and stuff because, again, it's pungent and it sort of moves stagnation. So there's some gentler kind of broader ways that we can do that so we don't find ourselves like kind of going to the same thing each time and kind of having this yo-yo effect of getting overfull and then moving it. You know, we can be a little gentler.
Good point. And, you know, I never thought about that aspect of people's, like, hot sauce addiction. I just thought, oh, they like the flavor, but probably their body is wanting that movement with every meal.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I have quite a few friends that, I mean, sriracha just goes on everything. If it's good, it's better with sriracha. So,
yeah, so that could be a little clue to say, oh, you know, maybe my body on its own or my food choices, you know, don't move so well on their own. So really interesting. So Rylan, I'm thinking about Thanksgiving when I go to my mother-in-law's house and we cook, and I'm always kind of joking with her when I look through her spice rack, you know, pulling out spice, and I'm like, how old is this? Like, is the bottle is yellow? Like, how long have you had this? And I think it's true for a lot of people that they've got some really old spices that they bought once for some recipe, and literally it might be a decade later and they're still hanging around. So can you help us with...
I think you are literally right.
Yeah, yeah, literally 10 years, maybe 20. So what's the best way to store spices? How long do they last? How, you know, are they still nutritious after 10 years? Tell us more about that.
Well, I have to say I'm probably guilty of having some of those 10-year spices somewhere tucked in the back of my my closets and cupboards. But really, the ones you're using regularly and the ones that, if you really want to get the most out of them, they really say, A, they, you know, they have to be kept kind of cool and out of the direct light, and they should be tossed and replaced like every 2 to 3 years. Other than that, the other thing I really recommend is maybe buying in smaller quantities, because if you don't know if you like the spice yet, you know, it is hard to use a whole bottle if you're not familiar with the flavor. And if you can get spices whole, that's even better. So we try to encourage people to find the whole spice. Like I always buy like my nutmeg as the whole nutmeg, and that will last for years because it's pretty much sealed up and the oils are very well contained. And then you just use like a microplane or a little grater and you just grate it. And it stays fresh for a very long time that way. So if we can buy them as whole as possible and then crush them ourselves, either you can use like a coffee grinder or they have real spice mills. I have a mortar and pestle. We can grate them or anything like that. Then you're really going to have them at their greatest potential, right? And you don't want, I would say the other thing is they'll last longer when they're not open. So if you use an herb once and you close it up and you put it in the back of your cupboard, it's going to last longer than if you have it out on your counter in the light and you're opening it all the time, right? Because the air will rancify it a bit and ruin it a little bit. The other thing that's really to know about spices is, right, they can be used fresh or they can be used dry. So a lot of people like to garden, and they will do a little herb garden that they can bring in the house during the winter, and they just cut their own. Like I go outside and cut my own rosemary all year long. The weather here in Portland, it doesn't get too cold to cut my rosemary. Little basil, little savory, all of those things can be grown indoors. So that's one way that we can use them and utilize them and keep them fresh. And the other thing is the way that we cook with them. So I recommend that people heat their spices. When you heat your spices, it actually brings out kind of a clean aromatic taste, and it kind of kind of brings them alive. So you can dry toast them before you use them. Or I don't know if you've ever heard of blooming your spices.
I don't think so. Oh, is that like where you kind of... No, tell me. I think I'm mixing it up with dry toasting.
So we can dry toast them, and then you can, or you can bloom them. So blooming is the term they use when you slowly bring them up in heat in a little bit of oil, wash them at the same time. So the essential oils of the herbs kind of combine into the oil and saturate it. You just use a little oil, so it just almost becomes just a wet herb mixture. Sometimes people grind all their herbs together and then put them in a little oil and make a paste out of them. These become really, really, really richly flavored and super aromatic when we do this. You see this in a lot of Middle Eastern preparation methods, for instance. And then if I'm using fresh herbs, I'll tell you this. One of the things that we want to know about fresh herbs is that you don't want to chop them. As we try to have people not chop them so much. When we chop them, it kind of ruins their flavor profile a little bit. So it's best if they're kind of hand muddled. You know, have you ever seen a bartender like making a fancy drink at the bar, and they do the process which is called muddling, which is basically crushing or tearing the herb together and kind of just mushing it. And again, that's going to bring out that clean aromatic taste, and a little bit goes a long way that way.
So you said don't chop it, just kind of rip it, mash it.
Yeah, kind of just mash it or smash it, or if they're like large enough, you can tear it. Sometimes, I don't know, I think my mother years ago told me not to cut my lettuce when I make salads, but to rip the lettuce instead. It's sort of the same concept. It gives it a fresher, it preserves a fresher taste.
Interesting. Okay. No, I didn't know that.
Great. Who knew, right? Care your herbs. Don't chop them.
Okay. No, that's really good to know. Okay. So try to buy in smaller quantities, especially if you're experimenting with something new. You know, buy the whole herb is better. Anytime you, speaking of tearing versus chopping, you know, anything that we kind of destroy, like say you grate an apple, well, you're not going to want to eat it an hour later or 2 days later. You know, it's been broken open from its little protective area, and probably in some ways similar to a spice. It's like those oils have, you know, left the site where they got cut. So,
that's right.
Yeah, better to have it. They've left the building. So those are great tips. And then you gave us a few ways to get the spices, the spice flavor to come out. Blooming. What was the first one? Dry roasting?
Dry roasting or toasting.
Dry roasting. Okay. And then kind of muddling. Yeah. I love
muddling
it.
Muddling our fresh herbs.
Okay. Yeah, and it is so easy. I am not the best vegetable gardener, but herbs are pretty easy to, you know, you can buy the little plants already ready to go and have those for a whole long summer, or have them in pots and move them inside. And I always find the flavor of those leafy herbs are so much nicer when they're fresh.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of them are really almost like weeds. They're pretty hard to not be able to grow, a lot of them. I mean, I planted the sage plant, and even here in Portland, it just like took over one half of my yard. It keeps, you know, putting out new sage plants. And I love taking those fresh herbs. There is some benefit. Of course, the dried herbs are more concentrated. So when you use dried herbs, you're going to use less than when you use fresh herbs. But I love taking fresh herbs and just mixing them in with my salad greens when I have a salad. It's delicious to have a little extra basil, a little bit of thyme, fresh oregano. There's so many different variations, right, of oregano. There's like chocolate oregano, lemon oregano. They all have like a little subtle flavor that I love bringing into, you know, and while I'm at it, throw a flower or two into a salad mix. It's really, really nice in the spring.
Yeah, I remember I read once, and I don't want to open up a whole controversial can of worms here, but I read once in a book by Kate Shanahan, I can't remember the title, but she said, you know, mostly what you're supposed to eat fresh are fresh herbs and fresh greens and leaves. That those are kind of the most digestible. We're not necessarily meant to, like, be gnawing on raw carrots all day. I won't get into all that. I know there's different opinions. But I think it is, you know, you think of, like, fresh leaves, and there's so much life in there. They often have that bitter taste that helps your digestion, and they have this aromatic quality that you talked about. So having some of those fresh, you know, we often put, like, fresh cilantro or green onion on top of our food, and I think that's a great way to add some fresh food to your diet.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that, again, you're getting that concentration when it's like parsley and cilantro. I mean, they're great chelators for heavy metals and things like that. And, you know, I mean, without going into that discussion, the one thing to remember, of course, is like munching on raw carrots all day. You really want to make sure you have some fat because the carotenoids in carrots are fat soluble, and we don't really get to make that beta carotene into A without a little fat with them. So we're going to have them raw. We want some hummus or something with them.
Dip it in peanut butter,
sure.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, spices, too, are a way of increasing digestibility. You're right. They're aromatic. They move, and they tend to be, yeah, bitter and pungent, and all of those things are great for our digestion. So I agree.
Cool. I'm hoping everybody's getting psyched up on spices and herbs at this point. Can you share a few that you think everyone should always have in their cupboard?
Well, there's probably six or seven, but I'm just going to share like three that are just really kind of on the top of my list right now and because they're all a little different. So I thought it would be fun to talk about, you know, three that weren't exactly the same. Of course, the very first superstar that is really just being studied so much, and I have so many different uses for it, is cinnamon. Of course, cinnamon is funny because what we buy in the store is usually a Ceylon, Ceylon cinnamon, and that's actually true cinnamon. And that cinnamon is the type that when you look at it, it's kind of like layered, like if you look at the bark, it kind of like thin layers on top of one another. It's a little lighter in color. And this is what most people buy when they buy cinnamon. And it is a true cinnamon. However, most of the studies that have been done on cinnamon are done on basically Chinese cinnamon or the Saigon cinnamon, which we refer to as guizhe, right, in Chinese medicine. So most of the studies are on that. They've done some studies on the Ceylon, and they're showing to be pretty positive that they're having very similar properties. And they do come from the same family. So I just want to say that because I usually recommend when people do cinnamon medicinally as a spice that they buy and look for the Saigon cinnamon, okay, which is easy to find, but you do have to look for it. So I just wanted to start out with that. But the wonderful thing about cinnamon is, in addition to it being very aromatic and an anti-inflammatory and antioxidant, all the things that we talked about that spices are by and large in general, cinnamon has some real specifics. One of the things, of course, is that we found that it is excellent for stabilizing blood sugar, which is huge right now because we are still moving ourselves out of the whole 80s carbo-loading, major blood sugar dysregulation kind of pattern that we're seeing. You know, so many of us in our practices, it's like all about blood sugar balance. And so cinnamon is fabulous at stabilizing blood sugar. One of the other things that comes with that is that it is very useful for cysts, like polycystic ovary syndrome, which they treat with metformin, right? They stabilize blood sugar. That's one of the major treatments for polycystic ovary syndrome. So I use cinnamon actually medicinally for people who have polycystic ovary syndrome, as well as any kind of ovarian cysts. They can drink cinnamon as a tea, where you just take a teaspoon of the cinnamon and hot water and a little bit of honey, and drink it as a tea twice a day, and it will resolve or dissolve the cysts, right? In Chinese medicine, we actually have a formula that is Romania and cinnamon for cysts. But really, the cinnamon by itself works very well. So for women who get mid-cycle menstrual pain, and who have a history of cysts, adding cinnamon is fabulous. Or even just menstrual cramps, because cinnamon moves the qi in stagnation and moves blood. So when people get menstrual cramps, I always tell them that a couple of days before their period is expected to start drinking some cinnamon tea, about a half a teaspoon in hot water, again with some honey, a couple times a day. And that can really move that blood stagnation and relieve or reduce the cramping that the person might experience. So those are a couple, the top of the iceberg about cinnamon. The other thing, there's so much. The other thing is that cinnamon actually is really strong antimicrobial. It kills bad microbes and bacteria such as E. coli. It can be used preventatively if somebody thinks that they've been exposed to E. coli. It kills candida, so it helps to reduce the bacteria that make us crave sugars and that throw off our intestinal imbalance, our intestinal bacteria. So it's very good for things like that as well. I could go on. One more thing about cinnamon before I move on. Cinnamon also, the scent, this is the one when I was saying that some herbs, just the smell alone is enough. The scent from cinnamon is said to boost brain functioning. And you don't even have to, you know, yes, if you eat it, but you don't even have to eat it. Just smelling cinnamon enhances people's ability to process cognitively. They did a study where they showed that cinnamon improved people's scores on tasks and attention and visual recognition and memory and these things. And they did it, you know, the full double-blind study. They did it against, like, peppermint and, I don't know, jasmine and no smell. And the cinnamon just was amazing. So they're looking at using cinnamon with elderly patients and with people who have, like, things like test anxiety, to see if it can help help them overcome that. So, again, those aromatics are an important part of the healing process. Yeah, so cinnamon. I don't know if you have any questions before I talk about another one, but...
I have a lot of questions, but I'll just ask one or two before. So interesting. I guess one question I had was, I'm just thinking of a client I have who has a ganglion cyst, not a reproductive cyst. Do you think that that could have some benefit as well?
You know, I don't know. I haven't made a connection between whether other types of cysts have any sort of a blood sugar issue and if that's the only pathway it's working along. I mean, in one sense, Theoretically, we could say that it could be helpful because cinnamon specifically from a Chinese perspective drives the qi in the channels and increases circulation through the channels. And so, and cysts tend to be obstructions of phlegm and damp. So anything that drives the qi and warms it would help resolve damp. So I don't know. You'll have to try it and let me know.
Yeah, I'll do some research. I'm just curious about
certainly
that one.
Wouldn't so, hurt.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention, too, that sometimes I use cinnamon oil or ginger oil topically on my clients with the heat lamp when they're having indigestion or diarrhea. So that's a way, too, to get some of these oils into you that they absorb more than you think.
That's right. I mean, transdermally, and you're absolutely right. I mean, cinnamon is also is really good for stomach aches and actually is really good at killing H. pylori. It makes the H. pylori, like, clump up for people who have, like, ulcers. And the only other really big thing I use cinnamon for is arthritis, which is kind of a folk remedy. but my clients love it and they keep it up. So I know that they must really be feeling the effect. So sometimes I'll do have them do that. I'll have them take again the cinnamon tea and use it for arthritis. They did some sort of study with that, and they found that they did it with 200 people, and they found that within a month, all of the patients who took the cinnamon tea saw improvement, and some of them had total relief of pain. So cinnamon's a lot easier to take than ibuprofen every day, in my opinion.
But. Safer, yeah. So interesting. So what do you got next? What's our next spice?
Well, I think before we move on, I should at least say, too, like, what is cinnamon, what maybe some ideas of things to do with cinnamon? Because, you know, I have a little ebook PDF that we're going to offer to your listeners. It has recipes. So the cinnamon tea is in there. So is like a cinnamon apple with raisins and such. But, you know, cinnamon works well with meats, right? Like pork and chicken, a lot of Middle Eastern, Moroccan, African dishes use cinnamon in their vegetables and meats and grains, as well as our sweets. So think apples and bananas and chocolate. Cinnamon pairs well with all of those things. And we can either cook it into meals like that, or like I said earlier, we can just put it on top of our nut butter. We can put it in smoothies. We can put it on our oatmeal. We can make a tea out of it. So some ideas
okay,
of
awesome.
How to use it.
Yeah, and we'll have that ebook available. We'll have that link on the show notes for you. It's free. Rylan's just giving it as a gift, and it's really beautiful. So just don't crash your car to go get on the link. Just go to the show notes later, and you'll see the link.
Well, the next one I was going to talk about is rosemary, because that is pretty easy to grow almost anywhere. And a lot of people are familiar with it. It is an herb that people seem to have some familiarity with and use. And it's got some interesting, very useful things to think about when eating. So, again, like all of the other herbs, it is antioxidant, anti-carcinogenic, anti. But in addition to that, rosemary has two things that I think are super, super interesting about it. One is that it reduces heterocyclic amines. They're called HCAs. Those are the cancer-causing compounds that people are worried about when they grill meat or when you cook meat at a really high temperature. It's often it's when the oil from the meat hits the charcoal or the grill, and then it comes back up and infuses the meat. And that stuff is really carcinogenic. Even, you know, all the cancer organizations say you really shouldn't eat charred meat and such. Well, rosemary is incredibly effective of breaking down those compounds and disabling them. Some researchers at Kansas State University found that when you cooked meat with rosemary, it reduced the HCAs anywhere from 100% to 70%. And so, I mean, how easy is that when you grill your meats in the summer to grab like an entire, you know, rosemary, the stick is strong. You can really just skewer your meat or vegetables right on the rosemary stick and skewer it that way and protect yourself from some of those HCAs. So I love that about rosemary. That's one of my favorite rosemary facts. And the other thing about rosemary is that they've done studies showing that just breathing rosemary, again, just smelling it and breathing it, reduces levels of cortisol. And, of course, cortisol is our stress hormone, and anything we can do to kind of bring down stress is always a good thing in my book. So those are the two things I really love about rosemary.
Awesome. Yeah, and I have a recipe I can share, too, for marinated lamb kebabs that you can barbecue. And then it has the rosemary in it and some other antioxidant herbs. So Yeah, great way to, it's a really fun fact and a really helpful fact because most people like to grill, but grilling with herbs makes it, like you said, 70 to 100% safer, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and it's not just rosemary. I mean, I think that sage and thyme also had a similar effect, but rosemary is certainly an easy one. And, you know, rosemary is one of those herbs that really, really complements a lot of your things like grilled veggies and meats like lamb and chicken and game. But rosemary is also really beautiful and tasty in vinegars. It's also really, I make, and I gave the recipe in the book of rosemary shortbread. So it's really good in like crisps and cookies and sorbets as well. So I gave, I think, a recipe for a vinegar, a simple vinegar, and for the cookies. I can't remember what else is in there, but it's easy to have fun with rosemary. And then I have one more.
Let's hear it.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just looking in your cookbook. I was just looking in your cookbook. You may have rosemary salt in there, herb roasted nuts in your cookbook as well. So, yeah.
There you go.
I was just kind of pondering, like, it's amazing. You know, these flavors are just so amazing how they work on so many different levels. You know, they can work in sweet food and savory things and with salts and nuts and they, you know, lower cortisol and prevent cancer. It's just, it's amazing what nature produces, isn't it?
What nature provides, it is amazing. And then, you know, when we look at Chinese medicine, the third, when we look at the classic eight branches of Chinese medicine, that third branch was diet, was food, and it included tonic herbs. It included cooking with spices as a way to maintain health and vitality. We really only got into medicinal herbs later on when nothing else works, right, or when we fall out of health. So we just, as we are starting to learn so much more about food, and it's not so much that we have to be on these bland sort of calorie counting diets in order to be healthy. Instead, we need to really like sort of bathe our senses in the richness and abundance of the food that's available, and to really re-embrace whole foods rather than worrying about, you know, the little functional aspects of, you know, the carbohydrates and fats and proteins. It's really more spices in particular are a way of kind of embracing the wholeness of food.
Yeah, we're almost getting beyond the micronutrients now. We're getting into these flavonoids and these compounds that aren't even really understood, which is really where the magic is.
That's right. And that's right. And there's thousands and thousands of them. And, you know, they're not considered essential, but I think that we're going to find that a lot of them are essential. I think that they are essential in the sense that they're the difference between a lot of vitality and disease prevention versus just kind of subsisting. You know, the vitamins and minerals alone are really too reductionistic, that we do need more.
Great. So what's number three?
Number three is everybody's darling, turmeric. You mentioned it yourself earlier. So
it is. It's the darling.
It's a darling, right? So I wanted to mention it. It is available fresh at some of your grocery stores, and also it stains everything it comes in contact with. I love it fresh, and I love it powdered. One of the things about turmeric is it's not really strongly aromatic, and it's really more brightly colored. That's where its power comes in, is in its color. But it is, because it's not aromatic, it's also not a really, really strong taste. So it really plays well with a lot of different herbs and foods and spices. You can really add turmeric to so many things, and hardly, you know, there's just nothing offensive about turmeric in my opinion. And it's so amazing. It actually, I think at this point, they say that it is one of the most studied herbs that is known right now. And the biggest, I could never, I could spend an entire weekend just talking about turmeric, but of course it is, from a Chinese medicine perspective, it moves blood stagnation. So when you think about that from a Western perspective, that means it's an anti-inflammatory. It's good for any inflammatory condition, and most of the conditions we're looking at now that are chronic have some sort of inflammation as the source. It's because it moves that blood stagnation, it's going to be good for any kind of pain, so dysmenorrhea or like painful periods, as well as pain in the joints and arthritis. It's good for autoimmune conditions, and it's one of the go-to herbs that I use to fight cancer, because it fights cancer on multiple levels. I mean, there have been over 1,000 positive studies on the use of turmeric in the treatment of cancer alone. So they see that, turmeric inhibits the genes that trigger cancer. So it would be an epigenetic way of preventing cancer by including turmeric. It kind of turns off those genes that are known to trigger cancer. It's been shown to reduce the spread. It shrinks tumor cells. It is said to starve the blood supply to the tumors themselves. And on top of that, it actually has been shown to enhance chemotherapy and radiation, which in my mind is really what it's all about. I mean, in today's world, you know, we are usually treating people who are working with and getting Western treatment and getting chemo and radiation, or chemo or radiation. And to me, it's all about get out, you know, get as much, you know, you don't want to be halfway through your chemo treatment and have to stop because your body's not handling it. You want to be able to take what they want to give you and survive it well. And so turmeric really seems to help with that. In fact, it's been shown to have like a positive action on something like 22 different types of cancer. So, yeah, it's a darling in my world because I do treat a lot of cancer recovery, and I see just beautiful responses with the turmeric, and doctors are usually okay with my clients taking turmeric. And then just one little word, for the recipes, I put in a recipe for fermented turmeric. So if you're a fermenter, you can ferment turmeric, and that actually increases its liver qualities. So it increases its hepatoprotective qualities and helps keep liver enzymes in check, as well as it increases the bioavailability of turmeric, because that is one of the problems with eating turmeric. It's why people take really high, expensive supplements, is so it'll be more bioavailable. Turmeric, if you were to just take it, buy it, and put it in anything, it's not always bioavailable. So I usually have people, when you're cooking with turmeric, you want to add like either pepper or some sort of citric acid like a lime or a lemon juice or pineapple juice, or some sort of meal containing oil or dairy. All of those things will make it more bioavailable, or ferment it. So I've given a little recipe for fermenting it. The Japanese drink fermented turmeric tea. You can buy it already pre-made into drinks and teas. So it's a fabulous one. I could go on forever, but you can talk.
No, I saw you have the turmeric tea recipe in here, which is one I recommend to people. It's a simple, delicious tea. And I've never heard of this fermenting turmeric, but, you know, I'll mention I took a fermenting class with your friend and colleague Tressa recently, so I know how to ferment.
Oh, nice.
Better now, yeah, so I'll have to try fermenting turmeric. That's really a fun idea. And yeah, it's funny you mentioned the black pepper, because one supplement we sell is kind of a spendy but very effective type of turmeric, and they have black pepper in the recipe plus some fat. And it is like amazing. I mean, you can take a dose and You feel your pain go away within a half an hour. It's pretty incredible. So, but you're right. It's not, you know, sprinkling. It's a liquid. It's an oil-based liquid. Yeah. So it's just, I think it's great to add it to your food, but I would agree. I don't think it's quite always strong enough to, you know, turn around certain conditions. So trying this fermented style, or I love how you're mentioning it, things that enhance it in the food, is a great option.
Yeah, it's great to add it to things and make sure that you add some foods that, increase the bioavailability, but to also do things like fermenting it or taking, if you have serious health conditions or inflammation conditions or an injury, then it's a good idea to kind of take it in a hyped up form for a little while. The fermenting too, since you're experimenting with it, try it a couple different ways. The recipe I gave is kind of like a pickling of it, and I just kind of match stick it really small, and then I leave it in the refrigerator and I add it to things, or I just chew on it. But some people ferment it by making, like, did you learn in her class, like how to make like a ginger bug?
No. It was just mostly a sauerkraut class.
Okay, so that's kind of how I make this. It's like with salt and with a lime. But I've heard of people fermenting it, and I keep meaning to try it, by making like a little ginger bug where you add the turmeric and you add sugar, and then you let it kind of ferment the way like a SCOBY from kombucha would, or the way that people make ginger ale. And so some people do that and then make it into a drink. So that's another possibility. There's several ways to ferment it.
Well, and I want to say to our listeners, start where you are. You don't feel like you have to suddenly be fermenting things. Some people might be, ready to add that into their. You can just start with, buying a supplement, or you can buy the fresh turmeric in most natural grocery stores. It'll be near the ginger. It's a root. It's a big fat root. You just start where you are with experimenting, and wherever you are is perfect.
That's right.
So,
and, one of our – go ahead.
Oh, no,
there's
yeah.
There's a lag time, I think, on us.
Yes, go ahead, and then we'll kind of close up.
Okay. I was going to say – one of the easiest things that I do with the fresh turmeric that I like is I grate some on my rice with a little bit of pepper.
Oh, no, I never tried that one. That sounds lovely. Yeah.
Super simple. Yeah.
Yeah, there's always a simpler way, so don't feel like you have to do it the complicated way. So I want you to share a bit about your programs. Anything else you want to summarize about spices before we get there?
I don't think so. I think, I love that you mentioned earlier this idea of, like, once you get in the kitchen and you begin enjoying the kitchen, just feel free to experiment. The worst thing that's going to happen is you're not going to like it, Start small and just ask yourself, like, whatever you are eating, is there a way that I could add a kitchen spice to this? And I can guarantee you that whatever one you choose is going to have healthy benefits. We don't have to start thinking about them as functional foods necessarily and, taking them specifically for the known properties, just adding spices. You're going to get all those, the anti-inflammatory, the antioxidant, the antihistamine, all of that stuff comes as a package and increase your metabolism. So I would say, if you have some yogurt, throw something in it, something you like. It doesn't have to be, like you said, fancy smancy or something that you have to become a chef. Whatever you have works. So that would be my closing notes on herbs and or on spices. We at the school, at the Wellspring, we teach classes on a regular basis. We have a professional level holistic nutrition program. It's a national certified program, and it is 18 weekends over 2 years. So it's designed so that people can work and still take school. People seem to really like it. Our emphasis in that program is whole foods, and it is healing people's relationships with foods. So it's very community based. Some other things that we have that are coming up that are really great for the Portland community, if you live in Portland, is our AMA program, which is an Asian bodywork style. Our students are having their AMA clinic, and so every Wednesdays until September, people can come in and get treated for $35 and get a full treatment. It's fully supervised. It's a great way to get more body work into your life and to get some Chinese medicine into your life. And the last thing I'll mention is that we do a Caring for Cancer class that is for anybody, not just practitioners, but for people who are surviving cancer. And sometimes the scariest thing about surviving cancer is surviving cancer. That's what clients tell me. It's like, now what? So it's for people who are surviving cancer. It's for people who are taking care of people who are actively going through treatment for cancer. The class has been really well received over the last 3 years. So if that's something that is of interest to you, that is also coming up later on this month. And I just want to say thanks.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. And I'm just looking at your website. I'd really encourage people to visit it. It's called thewellspring.org. We'll have the link on our site. But it has information about the holistic nutrition program, the AMA program, which is, would you say that's Asian Chinese body work, Rylan? Is that how we can define it?
Yeah, it's an Asian bodywork style. Yeah, and it's based in the principles of Chinese medicine. So, yeah, that's exactly what it is. We basically use our hands instead of needles and treat a lot of similar conditions. Not everything that an acupuncturist treats, but digestion and those sorts of things respond very well to AMA.
Cool. Yeah, see, and she's saying you can go in as a kind of a sample a patient for their students, which for $35, which is awesome. Or you can take a course in it, too. I think you said that's starting in the summer, right, the next AMA therapy practitioner?
Yeah,
course?
Our next AMA program starts probably next fall will be our next AMA program. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, yeah, if you're interested in any of these courses that, you know, we've mentioned, I can definitely vouch for Rylan, and I think her talk today vouched for her that, you know, she knows her stuff and she's really well-rounded. So you're going to be getting that kind of quality in any of her classes, whether if it's a class for the public or you want to become a practitioner. She's got a lot of great resources.
Thanks.
Well, yeah, you're welcome. It was such a pleasure to have you. What an interesting topic. And we'll have to have you on back again for another topic. Maybe we can talk about cancer next time or... yeah, any one of the many topics you know a lot about.
That would be fun. That would be great. And in the meantime, we'll go get spicy, hey?
Yeah, let's go out for some Indian food together. So thanks for listening, everyone. We hope you tune into the next show. The best way to keep track of us is to subscribe on iTunes or your whatever podcast app you use, and then it will just be right in your box to listen again. We also love your reviews on iTunes. That helps us to get found. And I want to mention, especially we talked a lot about a lot of topics today, you know, this isn't meant to replace your one-on-one medical care. It's just simply for health education and hopefully your entertainment. And we enjoy having you and hope to have you next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.